Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. So I want to take you on a little trip in your mind's eye to the junkyard. Everything in the junkyard now was once an object of great value. There was a day when it was bright and shiny and new, and somebody said, I want that. I'll pay money for that. And then a moth got it, or a rust got it, or a thief got it, or it got old, and it ended up in the junkyard. Didn't last. Nobody wants it now. Stuff is that way. All stuff is that way. All the stuff that you have now is going to end up in a junkyard. You're just the middleman. The only difference between the merchandise in a junkyard and the merchandise at Nordstrom or Best Buy or BMW is just time. Treasure is junk waiting to happen. If you want the formula, here it is. Junk equals treasure plus time. I saw an ad for a real expensive watch not long ago that said, you never actually own this brand of watch. You merely take care of it for the next generation. The platinum version, no kidding, of this particular watch sells for $1,230,000 for a watch that will still end up in a junkyard. A friend of mine named Roy is a Jesus follower who was in the junkyard business. He's written a book called Junkyard Wisdom about how to deal with wealth as a follower of Jesus. His family was a junkyard family. He told me amazing stories about people looking for treasure in a junkyard. His uncle, who was a junkyard guy, told about buying a junk car for $50 and finding a Stradivarius violin in the trunk. Roy thinks that the story's pretty dubious, but it gets to the point. We are treasure-loving, treasure-hunting people. Another guy walked into the office and told Roy's dad that his old junky car was outside and he would sell it for, you know, a few bucks. Roy's dad said, yeah, it was a busy day, so it wasn't until the end of the day he asked Roy to pull the car around back. Roy turned the key, nothing happened. He figured the battery was dead, no problem, because most of the value of a junk car is selling off the engine for parts. He lifted up the hood and the engine was gone. The man had stolen his own engine before he sold the car. Junk is just treasure plus time. That beautiful car is going to end up in somebody's junkyard. That valuable watch, that expensive table, those wonderful clothes. You can get a sub-zero refrigerator for a fortune. It's still just junk waiting to happen. I read one consumer advocate who said sub-zero is actually the IQ of a person who would spend that much money on a refrigerator. See, we're learning together from the greatest talk of all time, the Sermon on the Mount, and this week we're getting wisdom about treasures and treasuring. Now, there are some religious traditions who say that our problem is that we have desires and we get attached to stuff and that that leads to suffering. So we should learn not to desire anything at all, that the road to the good life is the elimination of all desires. Jesus doesn't say this. Jesus does not say that you shouldn't have treasures. People sometimes misunderstand Christianity as being anti-treasure. But Jesus understands, Jesus' claim is everybody has treasures. Human beings are by their nature treasuring creatures. God made us that way. A treasure is something you seek to keep because of the value you place on it. And we see this in real small human beings. Tiny little children will treasure a stuffed animal or a ratty old blanket, and their little soul gets all wrapped around it. It doesn't have to be valuable financially. I told you about my sister when we were growing up loving her doll, Pandy, which Barbie has kept now for 60 years and most recently has given to her granddaughter, little Sammy. I told you, Pandy was not an attractive doll, not even after reconstructive surgery at a doll hospital in San Diego. I will show you a picture of the doll Pandy with Barbie's new granddaughter, Sammy. That's Pandy on the left. She is one creepy-looking little doll. To me, she should be in the junkyard. She kind of scares me to this day, but she's somebody's treasure, see? By the way, you are somebody's treasure. We will come back to that. Nothing degrades a person, a child or an adult, more than to scorn their treasure. Even somebody who's experiencing homelessness, even somebody that's in prison or maybe at a concentration camp, will still have a letter or an old photo that to them is a treasure. If somebody that you love dies, some worthless article of clothing or a pair of old tennis shoes that belong to them becomes a treasure to you. Treasuring is a deep and wonderful part of what it means to be human. Now, the Greek word in this passage of Jesus' teaching for treasure is the word thesaurus. That's where we get our word, thesaurus, a treasure trove, a treasure store of words and meaning. And our lives are meant to be treasure stores of meaning. Jesus uses a variation of that word for treasure 5 times in the first few sentences of this text. So don't feel bad about treasuring. God loves that capacity in us, just as we love it in our children. He loves it when it is freely expressed. Jesus doesn't say, don't treasure anything. He says, don't treasure the wrong thing. Don't wrap your eternal heart around earthly treasures, not because they're bad, because they won't last. They are temporary. If the moth doesn't get them, rust will. If rust doesn't get them, thieves will. If thieves don't get them, your greedy little kids will after you die. Whatever that stuff is, it's gonna wear out, give out, burn out, rust out, run out, but eventually it's gonna be out, but not you. Remember, Jesus says what is most real is what is unseen, beginning with God, your heavenly Father who is unseen, and God's will, his kingdom. Physical stuff, see, is just physical stuff. It's just atoms and molecules put together. Physical stuff is not treasure until it is treasured by a person, a treasurer. And that's you. You are a treasurer by God's design. Everybody has treasures, and that means everybody has to find a treasure strategy. A lot of people in our day are what is called market timers. They will watch the stock market for signs that the market is going to drop, and then they will reinvest where it's going to be safe. IBM, Big Blue, first got listed on the New York Stock Exchange in 1915. Question, if you had acquired one share of its stock on that day in 1915, how much would you be worth today? This is, I know, a financially literate church, so turn to the person next to you real quick, if you want to, and guess the correct answer. Now, the correct answer actually is this. If you bought one share of IBM stock in 1915, you would be dead today, so you would be worth nothing at all. We have a way of forgetting this, but Jesus never does. See, people always want to time the stock market. Buy low, sell high. Anybody here sell off all your stock a week ago Thursday? If you did, you're a happy camper. Here's what you need to know when it comes to treasuring. Jesus is the ultimate market timer. There are 2 markets. One is temporary and the other is eternal. Jesus is pretty bearish on the earthly market, but he is extremely bullish about the heavenly one. The writer of Proverbs, long before Jesus, wrote, "Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Do not trust your own cleverness. Cast but a glance at riches, and they're gone. for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. A more recent version of this wisdom is a little poem called Money Talks. Money Talks, I'll not deny. I heard it once. It said, goodbye. Jesus is very pro-treasurer, and then he gives the greatest investment tip of all time. Store up for yourselves treasure in heaven. Now, the most important command in the Bible, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, is this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. That is, treasure God above all else. Treasure God above everything else. Love him, worship him, think about him, delight in him, meditate on him, adore him, thank him, serve him, prize him, be surrendered to his will, be grateful for his gifts, be directed towards his purpose, be secure in his love. You cannot treasure God too much. And gang, any strategy for investing that revolves around storing up earthly treasures is a bad investment strategy. I've heard this analogy, which is quite helpful to me. Imagine that you check into a room at Motel 6. You are not content with your room. So you go to Bed Bath & Beyond and buy the world's greatest towels for the bathroom. You go to an art gallery. You buy real expensive paintings for the walls. You go to Sleep Train and get the world's greatest mattress for the bed. You go to Best Buy and get widescreen, high-def TV to go in the room. It's actually very rare that people spend huge amounts of money to redecorate their hotel room. Why? Well, you're going to check out real soon. Hello, this is the number one rule in the hotel room game. People check out real quickly. Why would you invest huge amounts of resources into something when you're going to check out real soon? Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Jesus goes on to say that the eye is the lamp of the body. And the idea is that to live well, to live in God's kingdom, I need to see clearly. I need to see the worth of things clearly. See greed and consumerism and chronic discontent and a lack of generosity make me look at the world wrong. Instead of looking at what I have and being grateful, instead of looking at people in need and being generous, instead of looking at God and being confident, secure, I look at what others who have more than me have and I get envious. That's the darkness. There's an old parable. It's sometimes attributed to the Danish philosopher Soren Kierkegaard. Thieves break into a jewelry shop, but instead of taking anything, they just switch the price tags. And the next day, no one knows the real value of anything. And people spend a fortune to acquire something that's utterly worthless. Somebody switches the price tags. Nancy and I were in an antique shop many years ago. I had our youngest little baby in a backpack on my back. Nancy was 8 months pregnant with number two. Be careful, Nancy told me. This shop is filled with expensive items. I can tell from the price tags. I know you, Nancy said to me. You will start reading some old book and forget about the baby, and she'll knock something off the shelf and it will break, and you will have to pay for it out of your allowance if that happens. I think I can handle a baby, I said. A little while later, in the shop, I'm reading an old book, and the baby lunged, and Nancy heard it and whirled around. But because her person was much larger than it normally was, her stomach knocked a very expensive vase off a shelf. It cost a lot of money coming out of her allowance, but it gave me a certain satisfaction. See, here's the deal. All day long, we walk through this world filled with what God treasures most, and that's people. There's this amazing statement in the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy. For the Lord's portion is his people, Jacob, that is Israel, God's people, his allotted inheritance. See, other gods in the ancient world used people. Only the God of the Bible treasures people. You are somebody's treasure. God is so determined to treasure you that he sent his son Jesus to live and to teach and then to die on a cross for you. And not just you. Every human being has an invisible price tag, eternal, image of God, worth the life of God's Son. Who switched the price tags? See, life in the kingdom of God means treasure people and use money. Life in the kingdom of earth means treasure money and use people. The deepest desire of the human heart is to be treasured. Nancy was cleaning out some old stuff the other night, and she brought down some of her old calendars that I had never seen. One of them was from 1981. And on August 14th, 1981, in her calendar, we looked together where it said, Greg and Bonnie Speck, John Ortberg. That was the night we met on a blind date. I was in her calendar before I had ever met her. And then she had our next date written down, where we went and what we did. In those early months, if I would call her, she actually wrote down in her calendar, John called. I'd never read this, 30 plus years. I told her the first time that I loved her on a picnic in the spring. On that day, in her calendar, there were three letters, I-L-U. On the day that I kissed her for the first time, she wrote down, John kissed me, the most passionate and magically knee-weakening moment ever. Now I know why I'm alive. Actually, the first time I tried to kiss her, I went in for her lips and got the side of her face, and it was kind of lame, so nobody wrote anything down. Here's the deal. Every human heart needs to be treasured. Everyone does. Often, people think this is restricted to romantic love. Even in churches, sometimes people can feel like the message is married people get to be treasured, but single people don't. So I just want to say this real clearly. God treasures you. Married, singled, divorced, separated, rich, poor, black, white, atheist, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, gay, straight, young, old, happy, sad, the God of the universe treasures you. And then he invites us. And then through Jesus, he commands us to treasure what he treasures. Now, Jesus gives a profound piece of spiritual direction here. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. In other words, be careful about what you invest your treasure in, because whatever it is, your heart will get wrapped up in it as well. In other words, the good news is we can actually use our money to send it into those areas where we want our hearts engaged, because our hearts follow our money. My favorite story about this is the story about our first sofa. Early on in our marriage, we sold my old Volkswagen Beetle, and with that money, we bought a sofa, a mauve sofa. It was really pink, but for that kind of money, it was mauve. The man at the sofa store, when he found out that we had three children, all under the age of five, said to us, do not store up for yourselves treasures in a mauve sofa where children can eat and spill and the dog will stain, but store up for yourselves treasures in a brown sofa where nobody will ever notice. But we did not listen to him. We got the mauve sofa. Anybody want to guess what our number one rule was after we got it? Don't sit on the mauve sofa. Now, this is a little strange. The whole reason for getting the mauve sofa was to enhance the life of our family. But then the number one rule for the family was, don't sit on the mauve sofa. Don't use the mauve sofa. Don't touch the mauve sofa. Don't look at the mauve sofa. Don't think about the mauve sofa. On every other chair in the house, you may freely sit. But upon this sofa, the mauve sofa, you may not sit. For on the day you sit thereupon, you will surely die. And then one day came the fall. And then there was on the mauve sofa a stain, a red stain, a red jelly stain. And Nancy lined our children up, Laura, who then was four, and Mallory, who was 2.5, and Johnny, who was 6 months, and asked them, who put the stain on the mauve sofa? And I knew that none of them would tell. They just sat there in silence because they had never seen their mom so mad. I knew none of them would tell because they knew if they did, they would spend eternity in the timeout chair. I knew none of them were going to say anything because I was the one that put the stain on the mauve sofa, and I sure wasn't going to say anything. It's a funny thing. The day we brought it home, I thought that mauve sofa was the greatest treasure in our house. But to tell you the truth, we got rid of that sofa a long time ago. But we still have the kids. Stuff is temporary. Junk is treasure plus time. People are eternal. And if you invest your money in the kingdom of heaven, in the kingdom of God, if you sponsor a child that doesn't have money for food, or sponsor a classroom at an under-resourced school, or help build a house through Habitat that's going to help somebody who is currently homeless, your heart will go there. I asked one of the most generous people I know, what did you do when you were starting out to help you lay up treasure in heaven? And he said, more than 50 years ago, he and his wife decided to live by what is sometimes called the 10-10-80 plan. And he recommends this to everybody who's just starting out in life. The idea is, take the first 10% of your income and give it straight to God. This is called in the Bible the tithe, the first 10%. Do it right off the top. And then take the next 10% and put it into savings. So first, like you pay God, then you pay yourself. Create an emergency fund to begin with and then begin to prepare for retirement. And then after you've done that, use the next 80% to live on. But don't spend first, spend last. And now this man and his wife live on way, way, way less than 80% of their income. They actually give away the vast majority of their income. And that is where their heart is. See, when Jesus says, store up treasure in heaven, remember, heaven isn't just someplace way out there. The idea is not just, you know, you're going to get a big mansion when you die. The kingdom of heaven is right here. And I begin to have treasure, generosity, meaningfulness, joy right here, right now. But this storing up treasure in heaven began with the 10-10-80 plan. So just start with that simple plan. If you have kids, teach the 10-10-80 plan to them. Model it for them. I mentioned a few weeks ago, we do the tithe challenge here at Menlo. If you've never tithed before, you can go online, menlo.church, sign on for the tithe challenge, and start giving 10% right off the top to God. And if after 90 days it's not sustainable, if God's not clearly involved in your finances, allowing you this adventure, we will refund what you have given, no questions asked. Since I mentioned that, over these last few weeks, over 50 families and individuals have signed on and begun tithing. Way to go, everybody that's done that. If you haven't yet, but you want to consider it, just go online and check it out. That's part of the 10-10-80 plan. You might wonder, if I want to, can I give more than 10%? Yes. You may wonder, can I save more than 10%? Yes. You may wonder, can I spend more than 80%? No, that's the whole point of the 10-10-80. It's all going to end up in the junkyard anyhow. So don't let it tell you what to do. That's why Jesus said, no one can serve two masters. One way to think about it is this. Money is a good tool, but a bad treasure. It's a tool to meet your life needs, to care for your family, to provide for retirement, to express your trust in God, to be generous with other people. It's a good tool to seek to be a part of God's quest to make the world a better place. But it's a bad thing to make my money my treasure, because then it will be my master. See, you'll be shaped by whatever you treasure. If you treasure money, you'll be shaped by greed. If you treasure security, you'll be shaped by fear. If you treasure approval, you'll be shaped by reputation. If you treasure success, you'll be shaped by achievement. If you treasure physical appearance, you will be shaped by vanity. If you treasure power, you will be shaped by arrogance. If you treasure God, you will be shaped by love. One last comment. If you ever find yourself worried about money, if you ever worry about not having enough or not being able to pay your bills or not being able to educate the kids, if you ever worry about the cost of living or being able to afford retirement. If you ever worry about money or ever worry about anything else at all, Jesus has, in the Sermon on the Mount, the most staggering, profoundly life-changing advice on anxiety management in human history. And that's just 1 week away. So don't miss next week.